Welcome to the Deeper Than Dope podcast. Today I'm joined by Andrew Eubanks, a former Marine Corps helicopter pilot who transitioned from military services to corporate tech and now entrepreneurship and executive coaching. During Andrew's two major career transitions, he suffered mental health struggles and substance abuse, and now he helps others facing the same. He's passionate about mental health, leadership, the outdoors, and family. We've got a powerful conversation lined up, so let's get into it. Welcome to another episode of the Deeper Than No podcast. Today, I'm excited to welcome Andrew Eubanks to the show. Andrew, welcome.
Hey, Bennett. I'm so honored to be on here with you and excited to chat.
Me and Andrew got connected in kind of a weird way. I have a PR guy and he gets me on podcast. And then I get on a podcast with Andrew last week or the week before, whenever it was. And I'm like, where are you based out? He's like, Provo. And I'm like, I'm in Pleasant Grove. We're 20 minutes apart from each other. Anyways, I should have invited you over. I have another mic. We'll have to link up another time. But Andrew, can we start with just a quick background, minute or two of who you are, what you're doing?
Yeah, the quick, 90-second bio for myself is I grew up on a farm in Arkansas, and then went to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland for college. I played rugby there for 4 years. After that, commissioned into the Marine Corps, I flew CH-53 helicopters, so giant transport helicopters for the Marine Corps for 11-plus years. I transitioned off of active duty last summer and moved to Utah, where my wife is from. And so my wife loves her family. She has family here. I love the mountains. And so here we are. In Utah, I worked in tech for a while and then it wasn't really my jam. So I did some certification training to become an executive coach. I've been doing executive coaching for the last several months.
Awesome. How's the executive coaching going?
It's good. It's really fun. It's really fun to work with clients and see, the improvement and the progress that they make as a result of the coaching. And so I really enjoy seeing, the clients succeed and seeing them progress in towards their life goals.
And how does that, so the focus of the podcast is joy and fulfillment. And I do random phone calls all the time. I've had 3 of them today. I went to lunch with the guy that I bought Dirty Dough from and he has another business. It's just like, what are your problems? What are my problems? And you just kind of figure it out. And it is very rewarding when you find somebody that has an issue that is very hard to solve, but you've already solved it and you can easily give them the contact. It's just like, oh, no. All you need is this equipment guy and he'll do all of your equipment packages. He'll give you a kickback, this and that. Here's the phone number,
Yeah.
Very rewarding. When you transitioned into executive coaching, did that play a role in your decision? What's fulfilling, what's rewarding to me?
Absolutely. So when I'd been the recipient of some really good coaching myself. And I do an executive MBA program with UC Berkeley Haas. And so I actually commute to the Bay Area once a month for school. But part of the executive program is we do a week-long offsite, which is really just an amazing experience. But the first one we did was with a bunch of executive coaches from Berkeley. And they ran this amazing week-long offsite that I was just so impressed by. And the head coach, who is the founder of the Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute, his name's Dr. Mark Rittenberg. He was like, Andrew, you'd be a really good coach. You should come train with us at the Institute. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm working in tech. I just got out of the military. I've never even thought about being in a coach. But he planted that seed. And as I received coaching later on, I hired some coaches to work with me on some things, some mindset and mental health aspects. And I just saw the value in it for myself. And I thought, you know what? I think I've been mentoring and coaching people in the Marine Corps for a long time. I think I could do this and I really love serving and helping other people. And so I think it's a natural fit. And so I went for it.
I like that a lot. And so tech, what were you doing in tech?
So I was doing consulting. So account management for public sector accounts. Prior to getting out of the Marine Corps, I also did some crisis management and some government relations, public relations type work, managing and a international public advocacy campaign, which is a whole nother topic. But I did a lot of work with the government. And so that kind of led me into managing some of these public sector accounts for a tech company out here in Utah. And so I was doing that. but I was in an individual contributor role, and it just wasn't a great fit for me personally.
And that's my next question is what was it, what was missing that caused you, like, when this other idea came, you're like, oh, maybe that would fulfill that need better. That's not.
Yeah. You know, people are always trying to figure out, like, what kind of, you know, your career, your profession, that takes up most of your time for most people each day, each week. And so, you know, the whole idea of, like, finding a fulfilling career is, like, on most people's minds all the time. And so I have identified two paths that will lead to, like a fulfilling career. One is if you do something that is, like, you're super passionate about. Maybe it's making, like, delicious cookies and selling them to people and making them happy. Or it could be something where it's not necessarily a job that you're super passionate about, where you find a lot of purpose and meaning in, but you're doing something you enjoy doing. And it enables you to do your hobbies, your passions, or your work, spend time with your family. And so you can either do something that you're really passionate about, or you can do something that you enjoy doing, but enables a passion. And so that's why I kind of made the switch, because I wasn't really doing something that I enjoyed doing, and it wasn't something I was really passionate about either. So it was just not fulfilling at the moment.
And I think both of those are just like, oh yeah, that's kind of, you know, I want something that I am passionate about and or that I like doing. But yet a lot of, we still don't really know what that means or how to define it. What was that first step for you to even hear that, like, okay, I need something passion and or fulfilling? Where did that come from? Was that part of the coaching program that you're doing?
I mean, it's something that I introduce to clients now, because a lot of clients come to me for that are because they are making big career pivots or big life transitions. And so they're like, they feel stuck or just like, I don't know what to do, but I just know I'm not happy. And so it was just through my own experience. So I've pivoted from being an active duty Marine officer and pilot to working in tech as in the corporate world, as a consultant. And then I've pivoted to entrepreneurship. And so I've done a couple like really drastic, career pivots. And I've also had big life transitions myself with family and mental health and substance abuse and things where, I've had to like just figure a lot of things out on my own. And this was just one of the things that I figured out for myself, that if I could do something I was passionate about or something that I was good at, like that would be meaningful for me.
I like that. And a lot of times, yeah, it does come from the, there's always the fine line of like, can I learn this from just listening to somebody tell me, or do I have to go through it myself? Because a lot of times it's like, yeah, well, it makes sense that I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to prove you wrong and I'm going to be able to do it anyway. And then you try and you're like, okay, now I learned the same lesson, but it cost me money and time.
Yeah. And you know, when I made my first pivot into tech, like one of the big mistakes I made was I went for extrinsic values of like, you know, compensation package, perks, benefits, and, you know, the whole compensation and benefits package. And that's what really like drew me in and what I was chasing after. Right. And that just doesn't bring fulfillment. Like you need a certain amount of money to like survive and meet your basic needs. But once you get past that, like you really need to focus on intrinsic values, like things that you're either that are purposeful for you or that you enjoy doing, that you can like lean on your strengths and that you just have fun doing.
Yeah. And aside from that, I think there's another hidden value to that. Entrepreneurship kicks you in the teeth and then kicks you in the ass and then goes back to your teeth. What I mean, like, it's just, it's so hard. And when you come back and you're like, okay, well, I already have enough money to cover my basic needs. Why? This isn't worth the stress. But if you are attaching it to something greater and you know what that, like, no, this is my life path and I've chose this because I like doing it every day. So even with the stress, I could remind myself. So for me, it was a business coach that I had part of a mastermind group. And he's like, hey, what's your mission statement? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like company mission statement, personal mission statement? Because the answer is I don't have one. And then, so we focus on the personal mission statement and I narrowed it down to joy and fulfillment. And that was because I had already achieved a goal that I achieved, which was like, I wanted $1 million net worth, whatever, before 30, because all your problems go away. Turns out that's not true. So now it's, okay, what am I after? Well, I'm after joy and I'm after fulfillment. And then it's, okay, now how do I take this? And now what do I do with my business? What's my business mission statement? He's like, you idiot. It's the same thing. You know, like your business is an extension of you to achieve what you want to achieve. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And all it took was a freaking coach to walk me through it. And I was very hesitant on coaches before that because of my stupid mind, it was like, okay, well, my business is doing more revenue than your business. So like, how are you going to coach me? It has nothing to do with that, you know? And you can relate to athletes. It's like, okay, well, coaching and doing is a different skill. And even if you know how to do something, a lot of coaching is accountability and just somebody holding. Anyways, for me, it was huge in getting that mission statement and then applying it to the company. And then when I'm dying from all the stress, then I'm like, okay, if I waved a magic wand, what would I be doing? I'd be trying to spread joy and fulfillment now as much as possible. And how would I be doing that? I'd be focusing on mental health and mindset and empowering others through entrepreneurship, through a low cost way to enter into entrepreneurship through this franchise. I'm like, oh wait, I'm already doing that.
And yeah, that's amazing. That
cycle daily was very helpful to keep me going. So anyways, very, very, very valuable. On the skill set, you talked about rugby. I played a little rugby here, and it was actually the Stallions out of Provo. Ooh. It was a club team in high school. And I loved it. Rugby was great. What are some skill sets that you believe that you learned in rugby that you still use today, whether it's in business or life?
Yeah, from rugby. And so I grew up playing football and baseball and sports, and then in high school focused on football. And then in college, I was too small for my speed and too slow for my size. And so football wasn't going to happen. And so I really missed being on a team. My whole life, I've always been on a team and competed in as on a team, not individually. And so I really missed being on a team. And so I found rugby, and Navy actually has a really good rugby team and a good program. And so it was just a great fit for me to join the team there. But you know, one of the things is like in rugby, like there's no one player can do it all. Like you need other people. It's also like the other thing that I learned is just like in sports in general, but especially in football and rugby, is like you get bruised and beat up sometimes bad.
Yeah.
And it can hurt. But there's other people there with you. And if you have other people there with you to, you know, kind of endure that, it's a lot easier. And you also do it. You endure it for those people around you. And whether that's like an entrepreneurship, whether it's like the bruising that you get every day, like you talked about getting kicked in the teeth, you're doing it for your family, for your colleagues, for the people that you're employing. You absorb those punches and you get up and keep going. And it doesn't really matter how much you get knocked down. You know, I've had scars, staples in my head, glue. I've had, you know, wounds glued on my face, all kinds of stuff from rugby. But, you know, you just get up, you keep going. And that's the most important thing, is like, you don't stop, you just keep going.
Do you have people on your team that were Polynesians that would get bloody noses and they grab the grass and they just throw it up there?
So I didn't have any Polynesians on my team. Oddly enough, my wife is Polynesian though. And so okay. I'm sure she has seen people do that all the time, but I haven't.
Oh, it's like, oh, Lou got a bloody nose and he's just like picking grass and stuff in it. Let's go, you know?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Just rub some dirt on it.
Because it is like, okay, you're hurt, you're stressed, you have anxiety, whatever, but can you keep going? And if you do keep going, is that going to enhance your mood? And it typically does. Like, even if you're hurt, if you keep going, like there is a satisfaction of like, oh, I worked through that. I overcame that, whether it's a physical injury or an emotional stress. So anyways, that's a very cool lesson that I haven't heard when I've, you know, about sports, is like playing while you're injured and just knowing that you're not dead. And it's not like hustle till you're dead type of mentality, but it's just like the setbacks aren't as big as you think.
Yeah.
Staples in your head isn't as big of a setback as you would initially think. You're like, I could still play.
You know? And you know, there are injuries that you do have to, like, you got to come out and you got to get appropriate treatment and care. Just like in life, right? Like sometimes you got to take a time out and get the help you need, but a lot of times you just need to push forward.
Yeah. Taking the time out. That's something that I've been focusing on maybe for 4 months. And like right before this, The guy that I bought Dirty Dough from, he runs another franchise now, Indy Clover. They have 15 locations or something that they popped up in the last 18 months, doing really well on that. Anyways, he's asking like, how have you been handling stress and all of that? And I'm like, about 4 or 5 months ago, I just said, okay, I've proven that if I focus on solar, I'm really good at it. If I focus on therapy, I'm really good at it. If I focus on whatever I focus on, I'm going to solve it. So now my focus is on how do I elevate my mood and my energy? And I'm going to put most of my energy into that to sharpen the saw. And it's made the world of difference. Like I know what supplements to take depending on how I'm feeling and what, when I should use the ice bath versus the sauna versus the red light therapy versus the vagus nerve stimulant. And it's like, I just dove into it because I'm like, there's a million options and I'm not even exploring them because I'm so busy with work. And I told myself, if I just kept working, they'll go away. It never happened. It never has happened my whole life. So shifting that focus and like working on yourself first and specifically mindset, mood, and energy, and then everything else kind of follows along, right? You could operate better in everything. What was the precursor for you to start focusing on mental health and I guess mindset, sharpening the saw?
Yeah. When I was getting out of the Marine Corps, I was focused on, okay, where am I going to move? I was living outside of Washington, D.C. And I was like, okay, where are we going to move? Like, what is my job going to be? I was like trying to go through this whole process of getting out of the military. I was also running this like very high pressure, high stress public advocacy campaign where I'm like literally on the phone with the White House every other week, working with Congress, doing a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so it was super stressful. And my wife was pregnant with our fourth child. And I just stress built. And I just had this huge like mental collapse of just like spiraled hard with depression, anxiety, stress, panic attacks. And then all of that led to self-medicating with alcohol. And then that turned into a substance abuse problem. So now I have that on top of the mental health challenges. And all of that was just like, man, what am I doing? That was just this huge wake-up call that I'd never had mental health challenges in my life. Always been super healthy mentally and physically. And so it was just like, I got to get better. Like I have to like just, I'm either going to die or I'm going to get better. And so, you know, thankfully I'm for myself and my family, I chose to get better. Yeah. And that included taking a lot of hard steps.
What was the first step for you?
The first step was first just trying to go get help. The challenge with that was when I first went to go get help inside, you know, I started doing all the things that I would like tell other people to do if they were in that situation, like, you know, exercise, be healthy, you know, like for your body, because your body and your mind are so connected, like there's really no difference. And so, like, you know, I had like a personal trainer. I went and I started doing therapy. I went and talked to the doctor. They put me on like some medication. But the challenge was like, I got initially I was put on like some bad mental health meds, not bad as in like they weren't like legit. They are. They're like, you know,
they millions didn't work of people. For your brain.
They didn't work for me and they made things worse. So like, instead of like getting better, I got worse. And that was really hard. Then I tried a different mental health, like a different antidepressant, and that made things worse. Until I originally finally figured out that one, like those meds weren't working for me. I needed to like get a different plan with my doctor, or just come off meds completely, which I did. At that time. And so that was really helpful. And then I 4 months ago, I went to rehab. I did a 30-day detox, just like removed myself from, the opportunity to drink and, have been sober since. So coming up on 4 months next week, actually. So really proud of that, accomplishment and, you know, pushing forward with that. So really for me, it was about like removing some unhealthy substances from my body and then like being diligent and taking care of my mind and body.
I like that a lot. Especially like I need the 30 days. What a freaking smart idea, you know, to really put yourself first. Cause otherwise it's like, I'm putting myself first, but I'm not, right?
Cause
I'm not willing to take 30 days to fix that. You mentioned medication. Did you have a stigma around taking medication? Was that hard? I mean, I know it didn't work out, but like to even tell the doctor, hey, can you give me some medication to help me? Was there any blocks for that?
Yeah, there, you know, I had, because I had always been like mentally and physically healthy, like going to the doctor and getting medication was not something that I was really comfortable doing at all. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even comfortable like signing up for therapy. And it just like in the military, like I grew up on a farm in Arkansas. I've played like these male dominated sports my entire life. I was in the military. There's just huge stigma around getting help, especially because I think men, especially men, but, and then also you add in the military and sports and stuff, just don't talk about that kind of stuff. So like the idea that there, that mental health medications might not even be good for me. Like that wasn't even something I even knew about then, but like going and getting help was definitely challenging, but I was just like starting to go down such a bad spiral. I just knew I needed to do something. So I just knew the few things I knew that I could do.
When you went through that process, cause I was the same way. I started seeing a therapist like 3 years ago and I'm like, therapy is for people that are psychopathic or bipolar or whatever. Or they're professionals trained on helping you achieve the emotional state you're after. And I'm like, that, why isn't everybody seeing, like, everything comes down to, I want to feel a certain way. I want to get married because I want to feel a certain way. I want to buy the car because I want to feel a certain way. I want a business because I want to feel a certain way. Well, don't build the business and hope it makes you feel the certain way. Identify what you want to feel and go talk with a freaking trained professional. Another roadblock for therapy, I think, has been, well, one, how do you find somebody? Just Google it. Go through 10 therapists. It doesn't matter. They don't know you. You don't know them. Like, just get rid of all that. Like, oh, the pressure on it. And then two is price. And I do select health. I don't have a freaking copay. So that's my pitch for therapy if anybody's not doing the therapy. And then on the medication, talk to me about the, if you had type 1 diabetes and you and your pancreas doesn't secrete insulin, would there be any hesitation to not take insulin for your body to feel better?
No. In fact, I would think I'd be crazy if I didn't.
Yes. Okay. Now tell me what the difference is between your pancreas not secreting enough insulin and your brain not creating enough dopamine.
Yeah.
There's no difference in that,
you know, mental health is health in general. Mm-hmm. And if there's medications out there that work for you, like, why wouldn't you take it, right? I think, like, the challenge for me, which I actually found out later, was that I did in the over the summer, was you can do, like, a DNA test.
Predisposition to
And it'll tell you like which mental health medications are like green, yellow, and red for you, like good, moderate, maybe some side effects, and then like bad, right? And it turns out like two of the antidepressants I had tried were actually like on the yellow column for me, which if I had known beforehand, that would have been super helpful. But that's just another thing. Like if people are wondering like, oh, is this medication good for me? Will it work for my body? You can literally do, it only costs a couple $100. You can do a test and they'll send you a full report.
What is it called?
I'll tell you in 1 second. Let me pull it up and I'll tell you what it's called.
I'm interested in looking at that.
It is called GeneSight.
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 All right, I need to add that to my to-do list. Anything like this, I look at like, should I go buy another shirt or whatever, or do I invest into my health? And I made the decision that no matter what the cost, I mean, I can't say no matter the cost, but like time, money, and energy are going into health. So if it costs a few $100, I'm gonna forego something else or go make more money. But like, I have to know how my body works. And yeah, your mind's part of your body, just like your pancreas is part of your body. For whatever reason, we wanna separate them and say there's mental health and physical health, but it's like, no, mental health is just a subcategory under physical health because it is all physical. There's nothing in your brain that works that's not physical. But for whatever reason, we separate that and like, okay, well, if we're fixing our body physically, medication's fine. But if we're fixing our mind physically, it's not. I do think society's, we're coming over the hump on that. And I'm also not saying go take a ton of medication because there's a lot of medications, they're addictive or dependency, but at least freaking explore and see what's out there.
Yeah, talk to a doctor, like go and have like good conversations and be honest with like what you're experiencing. I feel like a lot of people, like even for myself at the beginning, when I first started to go get on medication, I didn't want to be like completely honest with how I felt and like the depression or the anxiety or the panic attacks. And like, you know, I felt embarrassed. And you know, later on, you know, now I think about it, like how silly that was. Like, why should I be embarrassed? Like, I'm not going to apologize for being human.
Yeah, yeah. And what could you have done differently in your life to not have felt that way? Tell me anything physically possible in the universe that you could have done differently. I believe you couldn't have. Like,
Yeah, it's not like I like raised my hand and said, hey, I want mental health struggles, or like, hey, I want high cholesterol or a broken leg or whatever. You don't ask for like these injuries or diseases or anything. It just happens in life, right? It's just part of the experience. And so there should be no shame in like going and talking to your doctor or multiple doctors about it.
Yeah, I mean, analyzing it, and this goes for just shame, not shame around mental health, but just shame. It comes from like a, oh man, I feel bad because I should have been better. I should have done something differently.
Yeah.
But if you analyze how your mind works, how consciousness works, you could, thoughts just pop up in your mind. And that's it. And then those thoughts mixed with your hormones and your desires and your wants, which are typically based off of more hormones and society and environment. But it's like the fact that you get to a point that you drink a lot of alcohol, like rewind the universe and it would have happened a million times. So there's no need to carry shame on any of that, because like it had to happen in the same way that fall turns to winter every year. Like it just happened because that's the direction of everything going. And anyways, for me, that's a really good tool for shame, embarrassment, anything going back, to quickly dismiss that and say, like, in a literal sense, if I was given every single situation again, I would have chosen the exact same things every time, because my thought patterns would be the same. My wants, desires, values, and hormones would be the same. And therefore, I am who I am for nothing else other than that's the hand that I was dealt. And it's a very freeing mindset for me. And it's very Eastern philosophy.
Yeah.
But it's been great.
Yeah, I love it. You know, going back to the sports a little bit is like, you know, I think, you know, there's so much shame also in entrepreneurship where people, you know, there's so much failure in starting businesses, investing in businesses. And I think about, you know, a baseball player, a batter, if they hit the ball a third of the time, they're considered like one of the best batters and hitters of all time, right? Or you look at like Tom Brady, he went to 10 Super Bowls. He also lost three of them, you know? It's like perfection and like winning every single time, just that's not real. But life, like you said, like those seasons in our life, they're just, it's a progression of learning.
Yeah, I heard, you know, we're always trying to win and we're trying to win more than we lose. But it's like, well, just look at the odds. That's not going to happen, because every time you win, you're beating somebody else. So anyways, I heard Jordan Peterson talk about winning, and he's like, if you're always after winning and you're too competitive and not fun to play with, then you don't even get invited to the play, to the game. You know, you're winning if you're invited to play. And I'm like, ooh, that's a cool definition of winning. If you're just playing the game, you're winning, because you're a likable person and you're having fun, rather than like, oh, I need to win. Another guy that I follow who's passed away a number of years, Alan Watts. And he always talks about the endless stupid game of one up. We're just trying to one up, and we're trying to get one up on the universe. You know, here's where the world's headed. And if I could just be a little bit better, a little bit ahead. And it's like, stop trying to be ahead. just chill, because trying to be ahead causes that stress, anxiety, depression, because it's setting unrealistic expectations. So now that you're an executive coach, tell me, I mean, any substance abuse is challenging. Going and away from everything for 30 days is challenging. But talk to me what confidence does that give you now as you're talking to other leaders, other executives, in helping them coaching them through similar problems that you've had?
Yeah, it gives me some credibility that like I've done it. And so if I can do it, you can do it too. When I was training to be a pilot, naval flight training is like notoriously challenging. You know, there's people who fail out and everything else. But I would always look around like left and right, and I'd see people that like aren't the sharpest tools in the shed, right? Yeah. And they were succeeding. They were like passing, right? And I was like, look, if those guys can do it, I can do it too. And when it comes to like substance abuse or any other challenge, like I say, like look around, like look at the people who have been able to do it, you can do it too. And one of the exercises I give my clients is like a value, identify your values, identify your core values, and you use those core values to as a filter for your decisions and your actions. And so for me, you know, putting my family and my health and just like living a good life above like my desire to, for substances, for drinking, that's in accordance with my values.
Yeah.
And so when I'm thinking about when I'm, you know, maybe I'm tempted to drink or to do something that isn't in accordance with my values, I just think about like, what are my values? And that's something that other people can do too. That they can just think about.
You have a million decisions you need to make every month as an entrepreneur. And if it's based off of, I want more money, and it's like, well, how much more money and why do you want it? All that. It's so much easier just to go back to, is this decision, if I accept this investment, if I fire this person, if I hire this, is it going to bring me more joy and fulfillment? For me, that's been like the easiest question to ask rather than like, is this the right decision because it's going to grow the company in a certain way? But it's like, is this bringing me joy and fulfillment? Now, there's a lot of subcategories to that that you have to figure out, you know, but man, I 1000% agree with what you're saying. And I encourage anybody that hasn't gone through that, go through it, find somebody to help you go through it, but it will change all your decision-making processes because now you can always fall back on your mission statement or your values, whatever you're going to call them.
Yeah. And you know, one activity that, you know, listeners can do is it's an activity that was introduced to me while I was in a leadership class at the Naval Academy, my freshman year, many years ago. But what it was, we listed, you know, everything, you know, what our priorities in life were, you know, a little bit of like value centric of like, what are your priorities? Mm-hmm. And then we listed out how we spent all of our time. And then we compared.
Sorry, Andrew, I didn't lock my door.
You're fine.
This guy doesn't get the he's too young for the shoe. What's up, dude?
No, you're good.
Do you want to say hi to Andrew?
Go ahead. No worries.
I apologize. That's happened 2 times out of 80. That was the second
time. No, dude. Nothing to apologize for, man.
Do you remember know, kids where are you're great. At?
Yeah. I'll hop in real quick. So one of the things that the listeners can do to find more joy and fulfillment and remove a lot of anxiety and stress in their life and live a more aligned life is this exercise that I learned my freshman year in a leadership class at the Naval Academy. And it's something I teach and do with my clients as well now. But you make a list of what are your priorities. You know, once you identify your core values, okay, that mm-hmm. you have that. Now, what are your priorities in life? You know, 3, 4, 5 priorities. And you could do the same thing as an entrepreneur for your business. Now, on the other side of a column, like list, how do you spend your time? And now you compare the two. Like, is the way I'm living my life, like with my time, does it mirror up with my priorities? And when I was a freshman in college, I realized like my priorities did not align with how I spent my time. And I redid this exercise myself the other day and realized like there was misalignment on a few things. And so now I'm making changes to realign like my time and energy and resources to align with my priorities, because that's where my joy and fulfillment come from. And when we don't live in alignment with our priorities and our values, that's when we experience like the stress and the anxiety because we're not living the way we want to.
And how do you live the way you want to if you don't even know how you want to live? Which is, I'm going to make this up and you tell me. I would say 90%+ of the population has never done that. Doesn't know the values. They know honesty, integrity, but they don't have it set. Like, these are the values. This is how I make decisions in this order. And then how am I going to evaluate my, 90% or more of the population I would say is in that category. What are your thoughts?
I would say probably like 99%.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was being way too, 95% of entrepreneurs, 99% of the general population.
Yeah. But like what, like you said, you can't make changes if you don't know. And I always tell people self-awareness is the birthplace of positive change. And I'll say that again, self-awareness is the birthplace of positive change. You can't change or improve or grow if you don't have self-awareness of where you're at right now.
I love that. That's where we're ending, man, because I can't say anything after that one. I just can't agree more with that. Andrew, how do our listeners connect with you?
So they can find me on LinkedIn or Instagram, and I'm sure your team will include the links in the show notes. And then also on LinkedIn, they can book a consultation with me if they're interested. There's a link just under my name on my bio on LinkedIn. And so, or they can just shoot me a DM on Instagram or
we'll throw it in LinkedIn. We'll throw that in the bio too. So
cool. Sounds
Andrew,
good.
But I really appreciate your time. Thank you for your honesty, your openness, your vulnerability, and congrats on everything you're doing.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it.